let's start with the good news. USDA at the top of the heap in your scorecard of the 12 large agencies you looked at. What did agriculture do to earn those high marks?
Well, the first thing they did, the first mark for which they got an A, was they made sure to step through the requirements of the Act and to implement all of those basic requirements, which are fairly simple. You have to have a plan. You have to have a compliance report. You have to have a web page. You have to have a way for people to contact you. And they made sure that they implemented those requirements pretty carefully. So they did the best job of that of any other agency. And then they also did a good job on these other supporting activities that we looked at, like having a training program and having specific goals and time frames for reaching them.
Right. So I didn't mention on the way into the interview, but the scorecard that you do has two components as far as letter grades the issue. They got an A in that first category, which is sort of jumping through all the right hoops and complying with the letter of the law. The second one, I guess I would describe as the spirit of the law, doing
right.
All those supporting activities.
Right.
Who else is doing it? And I mean, does that show that they're taking it seriously if they're meeting all the right things that you want to see in that second category?
Well, I think they are taking it seriously, yes. But we all know that it's not going to be a matter of getting all this done overnight. It's a process, the change in the way the government thinks about communication. So we don't expect anybody to be perfect at this point. We just hope that next year people get better grades.
And so given that, given your sort of low expectations, I guess, were you surprised at how many agencies got A's, B's, C's, or are you kind of grading on a curve here at this point?
I'm kind of grading on a curve, yeah. I mean, that A for agriculture was the only A. There's a number of B's scattered about. There's a lot of C's and a disappointing number of F's.
One surprise for me was the Department of Defense, which got a B in the category of at least meeting all the legislative requirements. So the DOD, of course, probably more famous than anyone for writing in inscrutable language. What have they done right?
Well, as with agriculture, they did a pretty good job of stepping through the requirements of the Act. And since this was the first year of this report card, we decided we had better look at the basic compliance with the statutory requirements. Next year, we'll spend a little more of our effort looking at the written products that they put out. And I suspect defense may not do quite as well in that area, although maybe by next year they will.
And Veterans Affairs, the only agency to get an F, and your report card on them was pretty short and sweet. It basically said they didn't answer your inquiries or provide any information. Were you surprised by that?
Yes, I was, because at least the benefits part of the VA has had a pretty strong program for years that they call reader-focused writing, and they've had a number of achievements. But we were looking at the department level, which is where these statutory requirements lie, and the department level did not do very much, so that was the problem for them.
I'm glad you mentioned the benefits side of the house, because it leads me into a quick piece of tape that I wanted to play. This is Allison Hickey, the Undersecretary for Benefits at VA. She came on board last year at the department, and the timing is fortuitous here. She testified about the Plan Writing Act during a hearing before the House Oversight Committee on the claims backlog this week. And she says after a meeting with Congressman Braley, the sponsor of the Plan Writing Act, she decided she wanted to implement this big time in VA. And here in this clip, she's talking about something called simplified notification letters, where they, they streamline the documents they send out to veterans to tell them the results of their claims for disability benefits. Again, Allison Hickey, the Undersecretary for Benefits at VA.
The convoluted letters we had were the number two reason our veterans called us. They said to me, explain these letters. I'll tell you, as a veteran that retired in 2007 and got these two letters that was confused by them as well, that we needed to tackle that issue. And I appreciate what Congressman Braley had done under this act to give us an extra push to do this. We implemented this new process in a live regional office and then a second one. I got 33% more claims out of that regional office than I had before implementing that initiative.
And Dr. Cheek, I think that's one of the points that plain language advocates often make, that if you're clear and straightforward with your communications from the get-go, you don't have to spend all your time decrypting your own legalese when your constituents or your customers call you because they can't make sense of your messages.
That's absolutely correct. And in this day when we are seeing restricted resources for government, and it's not going to get better soon, it amazes me that people in the government do not jump on the plain language bandwagon more, because they can save a lot of time and money. You know, the government's in the business of telling people what to do. And if you tell people what to do in a way they can't understand, how can you expect them to do it?
Another reason I wanted to play that VA tape was one of the topics that came up in that hearing on those simplified notification letters. It turned out that the veterans services organizations, who often represent individual veterans under sort of a power of attorney arrangement, ended up complaining about these because they said they didn't contain enough information for them to sort of understand how VA came to its conclusions. So, and I imagine you get this question quite a bit. How do you walk that line between overwhelming people with unintelligible legalese and, you know, eliminating so much content from your message that it really doesn't say anything anymore?
Well, plain language doesn't want you to eliminate important content, but we all know that a lot of government communications and certainly a lot of government websites have stuff on there that the government wants you to know, but it's not something that you really need to know. Now, that is a matter of judgment on the part of the writer. And it can be a difficult judgment. Obviously, as I say, you don't want to leave out anything important, but you have to make sure that it's stated in a way that your intended audience can understand it, instead of in the typical bureaucratic language that we're all unfortunately accustomed to.
Well, when you look at agencies, where are the tensions between people? Well, first of all, are there a lot of people who want to transition more to plain language? And if so, where are the tensions? Does it tend to be between certain people in one part of the agency and then, you know, I would assume the general counsel's office?
Well, the general counsel has something to do with it. There's certainly a lot of attorneys who are plain language advocates. Take Mr. Bailey, for one.
Mm-hmm.
He was a trial attorney, and he's a very strong advocate for plain language, and there are certainly others like him. But having been a Fed for 25 years, I would say that often the barrier to getting something out in a really clear way is that general counsel's office that wants to make sure you cover everything at least once, if not two or three times, because just in case you end up in court, they want to make sure you've said everything. So that's one tension. And the technical people tend to be very proud of their technical expertise and their ability to speak to you about these technical issues in a very technical way. They don't seem to understand that what might be good jargon inside their technical group becomes bad jargon when they use it for people who are outside that group, who basically have no idea what they're talking about. So that's another source. And the final source is that when you try to transition from being a bureaucratic-style writer to being a plain language writer, that's a very difficult transition. It's not easy to write simply, particularly when you've written the other way for years and years. I went through the transition myself, and I consider myself still to be learning to write well in plain language. So that's probably the final tension. I don't think there's much. Some people say, oh, the government doesn't want you to understand. And there may be little pockets of that, but I don't think that's a common motivator.
You mentioned the technical folks in government, and there's so many people that work for the federal government that work in the sciences who are still writing for academia and writing for scientific journals and publications. And I can imagine it'd be really hard to switch your brain from one writing style to the other. Can they reasonably be expected to do that, or do you kind of need a cadre of people in the government who are professional plain writers who can translate for them?
Well, that's a very good question, because I was in the regulatory area in several different agencies, and there were some of those people, those technical experts that I worked with, that I think would have a very difficult time writing plainly. Some of them could, and some of them would probably never get there. So I do think that it's helpful when you're writing important documents like that, that you have a plain language expert there alongside of the technical experts to help them express themselves clearly.
And last thing before we go, when you look across the whole federal space, are there things that you can say differentiate, I'll call them, for lack of a better term, the good agencies from the bad agencies, agencies that are getting it at this point? Is it leadership emphasis? I know that's one of the things that you survey.
Well, yes, I think leadership certainly is important. The IRS, for example, which is trying very hard to do plain language, and some of the HHS agencies that are trying very hard to do plain language, it certainly is leadership. And let's take SEC. Under some previous leaders, there was a lot more emphasis on plain language than there is now, and I think you can see that in the type of products that they turn out. We didn't look at them this year, but we may look at them next year. So, yes, leadership's important. And, of course, having the people there who can actually write in plain language is another factor.